creativity isn't creativity unless something is built. And for that, you require the chronos hours of time to be put into, that are those hours of practice to be able to build something and actually trust yourself to enter Kairos.
You're tuned into episode 1 of Mind the Gap, a podcast where we bridge diverse perspectives, one conversation at a time.
Welcome to Mind the Gap, a podcast where every fortnight we explore the topics of self-leadership and neuroscience in service of holistic well-being. I'm Harmeet Anand, with extensive experience coaching leaders across global organizations. I use the ontological approach, somatic principles, and mindfulness practices to support the leaders and teams I coach.
And I'm Sana Anand, with a background in heart science and a budding neuroscientist.
We'd like to preface that we are not experts in these realms,
and we invite you to join us in our podcast where we document our conversations, offering distinct generational and professional points of view. Stay tuned.
Today we'll be talking about purpose, why we seek it, need it, and when do we know that we've found it. So, you know, I'm kind of an amateur with figuring out what my purpose really is. And I know you're more of a seasoned adult and I'm more experienced with this. So I'm just wondering, how did you end up to being here?
The profession of coaching for me, Sana, is almost like my version 2.0. My version 1.0 in the corporate world was essentially helping people change behavior, consumers change behavior for the sake of buying the brands that I was custodian of. And now as a coach, I call myself a version 2.0 of, again, changing behavior, but behavior for the sake of creating better outcomes for leaders and teams that I support. So it's pretty close to what I was doing earlier.
Yeah. Well, I've actually changed my trajectory quite a bit. So I started out with art, moved to molecular biology, and now I've gotten into neuroscience. And this bounding around all over the place might seem like I'm changing my purpose. I don't really know what it is, but perhaps that is like my exact purpose, to find an interdisciplinary of my strengths in all of these areas. But with this podcast, I'm looking for a way to apply myself with those neuroscientific concepts, because we look at them on such a narrow scientific scale, and I wanted a way to contextualize it for my life and for the lives of others. Because of the focus of this podcast episode is purpose, I'm just wondering, what is the crux of our purpose? What is it composed of?
Purpose in general, as a term, can be actually very, very wide and at the same time very specific. I would like to explain it through an example, if I may.
Sure.
If you take any tool in your toolbox, like a hammer can actually achieve a lot of things other than the purpose that it has been designed for, which is driving nails. I mean, you can use a hammer even as a weight, paperweight if you want, or to break coconuts, right? So I think a better question, which I have seen people ask, is not just what is the purpose, but what is my authentic purpose? Because we can do a lot of things if we want to get ourselves, but what really feels like our authentic purpose?
And in a lot of cases, though, these natural aptitudes are not necessarily societally profitable. And that's what makes it hard. And that's when you pivot into trying to fit into a mold where it's not necessarily rewarding or fulfilling to you as a person.
I might want to add there's something.
Yeah.
I feel that whatever your natural talents are may not initially feel like as if they are being rewarded financially, socially, like you said, but they always, in some form or fashion, do bring some sense of satisfaction in people's lives. Things that we are naturally designed for, if we are creative around those talents, they do give us a sense of satisfaction and happiness.
I'm just wondering, how did you find your purpose? And because I know you so well, I know your purpose is helping other people find their purposes. So how do you go about encouraging others to find their purpose?
I think there was a point in time where I was also questioning and asking the same questions like you were, especially when I was transitioning between my first corporate career and then, you know, now that I'm coaching and facilitating change. And when I was asking that question, I realized that I could not find my authentic purpose in a silo. So I had to ask people, I had to have mentors and family members who were telling me what my natural gifts were. And I realized that somehow, without my even knowing, they were telling me that I have a way with listening or even my presence. And that's, presence is something that I, you know, one of my theater mentors had also told me, you know, in my teen years. So if it was really about listening and presence, now you can see they are very subjective qualities. You can use all of that to be so many different things. I mean, I was doing theater when I discovered somebody giving me that feedback that there's presence. So I think finding that purpose myself, that was your question. It was really not a thing that I did in self-contemplation. It really came to me when I was getting feedback from others. And I've realized that while finding your purpose is one thing, but living on purpose is another, absolutely a different ballgame. At the same time, I want to reiterate that when we are living on purpose, we find that, you know, there's a part of our genius that meets the genius of others. And when that happens, it creates a ripple effect and pockets of happiness in the world.
No, I just wanted to operationalize the word genius here. When I look at genius, I don't look at it as a noun, like, oh, genius, you're categorized as a genius. The question is rather, how are we genius as an adjective?
I agree.
And we each have our own aptitude that can't necessarily be measured. And that's where things like standardized testing fail. Maybe this is just stemming from my hatred of standardized testing, like the SAT.
It has not been too long since you gave your SAT, but I would love to know today, what are the reasons that are that make you not like standardized testing?
Because it started with the eugenics movement, the entire notion of SAT testing. And by the time Ivy Leagues ran with the concept, they ran with it. And it was too late when it was found out to be redundant. And people actually revoked their opinions of such testing. And actually, it is used to weed out people from the population, because it targets certain stereotypes where some people may think that they have a certain aptitude based on their race, class, or socioeconomic status, or don't have such an aptitude. And therefore, in that testing, conform to those stereotypes. And then you see very similar groups in pursuing certain aptitudes. And that is actually a very damaging notion. That's when I start to think of genius as being a state rather than a trait. And by state, I mean, when you're in a flow state, you have that positive attitude and you have a passion for things because your skills are meeting the environment that you're in, and because you have the resources available to you, you're able to pursue that action. And that leads to changes in bodily states as well, like endorphin releases, adrenaline release, a change in your brain state. So you have a more excited brain state as well as more metabolic processes.
You know, it reminds me of the flow state that you get into. You know, when you're saying being addicted to the present state, it's like a higher frequency beyond what we do in our day-to-day frequency or vibrations that we have, which are more of, you know, a state of mind where we can solve problems. But the state of flow is completely different. I wonder if you know about the Kronos and Kairos.
No, what about this in terms of like Greek gods, but not necessarily applied in this sense?
I think it really makes sense to just touch upon this a little bit, because, you know, when it comes to purpose, we are thinking of like, what am I going to do with my time and how is it going to be most effective? So the Kairos time is essentially the time that we find ourselves in flow. Whereas the Kronos time, coming from the word chronological, is really the linear time, the one that we can see in the clock and we want to have a control over. The experience of Kairos time is something close to what you mentioned, which is like addiction to the flow of things and maybe when the endorphins get released. The more we find ourselves experiencing the Kairos time, the closer we are living to what we were designed to be or what we were designed to enjoy in our lives.
But that freedom from time can only come with expertise, because creativity isn't creativity unless something is built. And for that, you require the Kronos hours of time to be put into that, those hours of practice to be able to build something and actually trust yourself to enter Kairos.
Yeah, I agree. I think that brings, you know, the topic on practice. To enjoy the Kairos time, the idea of having practiced to become almost feeling like an expert, even though you're, you know, I've noticed that a lot of people who are actually living their purpose for many years have a sense of a humbling experience around learning, and they don't see themselves as experts or gurus, even though others might see them.
Yeah, that sense of humility and characterized like abashed lack of awareness of their genius or their state of genius is quite something that I value in a lot of people that I look up to. And honestly, now that we talk about this, it's reminded me of a study that actually came in the newspaper recently as well, and I've read about before, of high and low experienced jazz players. Mm. So it's found that when higher experienced jazz players are playing, they tend to enter flow states more often. And that's characterized by higher activation of the default mode network that indicates self-reflection, as well as them entering a resting state.
So the creativity, which we essentially relate to a childlike feature, mm-hmm. and the self-reflection that we relate to a more adult-like feature, mm-hmm. is essentially emanating from a same brain network. That is pretty interesting.
Yeah, in a sense, because we're trusting our subconscious, we're able to release that executive control, the cognitive control that we're exerting. And in neuroscientific terms, I'd say there was also transient hypofrontality found, which sounds like a lot of jargon, but basically it means that the prefrontal cortex deduces an activity or it lets go. And so we're able to give up that chronos anxiety around the outcome and around time and actually enjoy that kairos time.
Nice. You know, to be able to enjoy the kairos time, you've rightly stated that either you have to let go from time to time that anxiety around chronos and then letting go.
Trust your skills to be in the present, yeah.
And that would be built through practices.
Exactly. Actually, just an interesting fact, a lot of mad geniuses have found sporadic activation in their executive control and their default mode network. But that was just something interesting I wanted to throw in there.
Yeah, I think in all of this, a healthy detachment to outcomes, which otherwise creates interference in how we're doing, and we start becoming critical of, you know, what's happening around you. That's really important to be living a life on purpose, right? Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, what you just shared is something very close to a term that we use in change, which is moving from unconsciously incompetent to then becoming unconsciously competent, which is a pathway that's covered by being first consciously incompetent, learning that we do not know something,
mm-hmm.
and then doing things enough times with lots of repetitions so that we become consciously competent, and finally doing it so much that we've become unconsciously competent, maybe like the jazz players that you were talking about.
That, and it's also sounding a lot like driving, now that I think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you spoke about this resting state and something about the default mode network.
Yeah.
I want you to explain to our listeners, like, what do you really mean by the default mode network?
Right. I forgot to cover that in depth. So let me just explain that. The default mode network, so a lot of us think that in our resting state, our brain would actually be less active than usual, but there are certain regions that are actually more greatly activated. And in the default mode network, it basically indicates those parts that are greatly activated or increasingly activated in our resting state than when we're active. And it has implications in recent mindfulness studies as well. And this is contrasted with our executive control network, which is related to our prefrontal cortex of our brain, the most developed part of our brain, which is responsible for cognition. So attention, decision-making, basically very active thinking-related tasks. And that's what distinguishes us from other animals.
Thanks for educating us all. Come back to the point that we were discussing before this, if I may, around practice,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of practice. And I think practice seems to be playing a huge role in experiencing those flow states. And I would say from the question of this episode, practice plays a big role in therefore experiencing living on purpose. It just doesn't happen immediately. As a coach, from the coaches or the clients that I coach, initially, it's amazing that how many of them are still unaware of the things that they have to work on. But it's only as the coaching progresses, it's through the practices that behavior change also happens. So it's a very important aspect of creating a life that you want to create or a leadership outcome that you want to create for yourself.
It's difficult and frustrating because purpose isn't possible without practice, but that's not easy.
Yeah, and that's practice, like you said, it can be very difficult and frustrating because being that unconsciously incompetent and then moving to consciously competent is not an easy task. You make a lot of mistakes, you fail along the way, but it's necessary to rewire your neural network.
I just wanted to bring another thing into the discussion. How do you think relationships play a role in staying on purpose? Because a lot of people think that figuring out our purpose sort of happens in a vacuum and it's a very enlightened sort of question to ask, but a lot of the times we think of enlightenment as an individual's journey. But how do you think multiple people, community plays a role in that?
So the community playing a role in finding purpose, I think that's a great question, because I think relationships help individuals more than finding purpose to be living on purpose. Especially because, you know, you don't get an instant reward. It can be equally frustrating to continue to do things, maybe not receive the outcomes you want initially. And relationships play a big role in being that support system for you, encouraging you and motivating you.
Yeah, because if I think about this, like, we want that instant reward and that, like, dopamine activation, but when that result is so prolonged or we don't actually see that it meets our expectations, that dopamine activation might actually be lower or just not be released at all. And that, like, sort of negative error might deter us from pursuing that purpose.
From my perspective as an entrepreneur, I know I keep getting a lot of new ideas and I want to start new things. And, you know, when actions do not meet the outcomes that I had in my head, that aversion kind of sets in and you don't want to do it. And then therefore keeping yourself on, you need a non-judgmental outlook, which you can receive through feedback from others. And it's harder sometimes to get it from yourself, I feel, for most people.
Yeah, not to rehash this, but a lot of what you're saying is, in isolation, we end up being in a fixed mindset, whereas with others, we can pursue a more growth mindset. And it's a very overdone topic, but there are some interesting implications in the brain activation for fixed versus growth mindset. So it's been found that with the fixed mindset, there's a greater activation of the medial prefrontal cortex, and stick with me here with all of the jargon, but that's more involved in self-referential and social judgment. Whereas with the growth mindset, there is greater activation of the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, and that is more involved in cognitive control. And the ventral striatum is also activated, which is involved in more motivation and reward anticipation. So if you look at these together, you would see that the DLPFC and the ventral striatum would help in controlling the emotional reaction so that we can actually sustain our attention for our long-term goals in sight.
Is it about controlling emotions or knowing what emotions to really enact out and the ones you need to manage?
Yeah, exactly. I think cognitive control also plays a role in that sort of management and categorization too. And that's when the fixed mindset is really about thinking in a vacuum, but the growth mindset is what's encouraged by others. So it could perhaps serve as a cue for when we can't actually see what our reward will be, those cues, consistent regular cues, could actually be more helpful than when we actually tried to self-motivate.
Yeah, and I still know lots of people out there who believe that you can still have these conversations with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having to look for relationships that would support you. And the thing is, having those conversations with yourself, you have to first know that you have a highly critical mind by the time you're an adult.
Just to summarize our discussion here.
Sure.
With respect to the paths of purpose, I think we've covered natural aptitudes as being a good soil, as well as our inclinations and where our geniuses lie. And then along with that, we need to maintain certain practices and actions and responses as well. So with that, I would say I also want to bring in something about challenge and threat responses. So with our right frontal asymmetry, it plays a role in whether we withdraw or avoid behavior. So right frontal asymmetry is associated with withdrawal behavior. So when we see a threat, we tend to withdraw. But with a left frontal activation, when we see things as a challenge and we tend to approach. So this frontal asymmetry is actually very malleable. And that's when I start to think that practice can be motivated by relationships and conversations rather than being in a vacuum of self-talk. Meeting people in those conversations to being on purpose can help shift that perspective very easily. Well, we spoke about that in terms of fixed and growth mindset, and now I've just brought in a new element here.
Yeah, thanks for an amazing summary. So I hope this conversation that you wanted to have around purpose and how we seek it, why we need it, all those queries that you had have been aptly answered for you.
Yes, and I'm definitely going to have more questions later, but thank you so much for this very valuable discussion.
Thank you so much, and thank you for sharing all the knowledge around neuroscience, and I found it very fascinating. I look forward to our next episode.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mind the Gap. You can subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this. We hope you learned something from our different perspectives, and if you did, let us know your takeaways on our social media Instagram handle at mindthegap.show.
You can access the show notes of this episode on coachformax.com. That's coach4max.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you feel motivated to engage in conversations that bridge diverse perspectives and create greater mutual understanding.